Imagine yourself driving alone at night. The bends in the road are just beyond your line of sight. Each curve and turn a mystery as you wind your way home. A glimpse of something catches your eye. You slow the car, crane your neck to look, but see nothing. It flitters before you again, and turning back, you slam on the brakes. A frightened woman stands in the road, hands up and pleading. Her white dress settles around her as she flies to the passenger door. She hits the window, begging, pleading for help. She needs a ride. You unlock the door. She slips inside, panting, and tells you her address. And for a long time, she's quiet. Here is where you make a choice. She's a lovely woman, really, despite how shaken she is. Do you tell her so? Flirt a bit? Hope for an invitation home as a reward for being her savior? Or do you let her be? Depending on your answer, she may either vanish before you reach your destination, leaving you shaking your head and wondering if the whole ordeal was a nightmarish hallucination, or she'll tear your throat out. Your car crashes, you bleed to death on the side of the road. Think before you speak. Of course, tales like this one are simply urban legends, right? Cautionary tales. Nothing to fear. After all, what danger could a woman possibly pose to anyone? Allow me to introduce Lady Lucille Sharp. Welcome to Courting Casualties. I'm Megan Harker. Guillermo del Toro's latest film, Crimson Peak, is a rare treat for those of us who love the gothic. It was destined to be my favorite movie of the year long before it reached theaters. The lush costuming, the sets, every element called to me from a past life I try to recreate in my current one. Yes, I really dig the gothic. That's why I started a podcast about it. The trailer for the film is specifically cut to make Crimson Peak appear to be a horror movie. The opening shot of the decrepit house, the water in the bath running red while a shadowy figure lurches behind the frail heroine, warnings to never go below certain parts of the house. All are typical fare at this point for the horror movie crowd. There are specific expectations to uphold, after all. Thrills, chills, blood spills. And, instead of widely sung praise, viewers left unfulfilled. Those expecting modern terrors were largely disappointed. I can't say I'm surprised. It's not the horror aspect that proves problematic to the modern audience. It's the gothic. In this age, we're far removed from the idea of the gothic and what it means, even gothic horror. In fact, the addition of the G word probably invokes images of black-clad, pale-faced death lovers and possible increase in gore level. Moviegoers expect blood, gore, torn body parts when they hear the word horror, but the gothic doesn't focus on bursting pipes filled with blood. It emphasizes emotion. The real monster is the one inside your mind. According to Del Toro, Crimson Peak is, more accurately, a gothic romance. Sadly, this too seems to cause confusion, considering gothic horror and gothic romance are basically the same thing. No, really, Google it. Gothic romance, or specifically the Romantic period, capital R, isn't about romance, lowercase r, at all. Romanticism is the artistic movement that resulted following the Industrial Revolution and the Age of Enlightenment. Until that point, Romanticism peaked from 1800 to 1850. Realism had been the norm. The exploration of themes shifted from external source to internal experience, emphasizing emotions like fear, horror, and awe. As the world began building up via machinery, the artist looked back to the simplicity of nature and the internal and mental condition of man. Gothic romance is not romantic in the sense of unrequited love and clandestine encounters. Gothic romance is downright terrifying. And for the women involved, mixed with that terror is power. Crimson Peak is a highly feminized film, filled with inversions of tropes that resonate with women in the audience. Most of the film's greatest praise comes from its female viewers. The film follows Edith Cushing, Mia Wasikowska, a young writer trying to publish her gothic fiction. She's frustrated because her penmanship is too feminine, and she feels she'd be taken more seriously if publishers believed her a man. This most certainly echoes the Brontes' experiences. A mysterious gentleman, Thomas Sharp, played by Tom Hiddleston, arrives in town along with his sister Lucille, Jessica Chastain, and Edith finds herself obsessed with him because Sir Thomas believes in her work. After an unfortunate family tragedy, Edith marries him, and they move to Ellerdale Hall, a crumbling English estate with a dark history. Yes, there are ghosts in this film. What did we learn last time? The ghosts are remnants of the past, creeping in to disturb the present, bringing warnings and trying to protect another soul from joining their ranks. As Edith says about her own work, the ghosts are a metaphor. It's not a ghost story so much as a book with a ghost in it. Ellerdale Hall is a living, breathing entity, a carcass encasing everything inside. The ceilings are rotting and collapsing. Red clay oozes beneath the floorboards. It drips down the walls. I was deeply saddened that the line from the trailer had been cut from the film. In a voiceover, Sir Thomas speaks to Edith about the house. A house as old as this one becomes, in time, a living thing. It starts holding on to things, keeping them alive when they shouldn't be. Some of them are good, some of them bad. Some should never be spoken about again. Perhaps like the ghosts of your murdered wives and mother. Juxtaposed with the very real spectral entities is Thomas's drive to revive the family minds. Sharp is an inventor surrounded by modern, by Victorian standards, technology, living in a haunted house. He strives so hard to change his future, but refuses to acknowledge that he is trapped in his past. In fact, Edith points this out to him while they're snowed in at the depot. While Edith and Thomas are certainly worthy of attention, this episode is not about them. I want to talk about Lucille. Thomas's sister, Lady Lucille, is an omnipresent and powerful force. Outside of Ellerdale Hall, Lucille is a very different person. When she first meets Edith, she is quiet and reserved. Even when confronted by Carter Cushing, Edith's father, Lucille maintains a calm composure. She's very softly spoken. She's smaller outside, and clearly uncomfortable being away from home. And once she returns, the longer she resides on Crimson Peak, the larger she becomes. Her dresses grow more elaborate. Her moods are in tune with the breathing of the house. Ellerdale Hall and Lucille are entwined by suffering and pain. As children, Lucille and her brother were confined to the attic. Both of their parents were abusive, physically and verbally. Lucille often protected Thomas from their mother's wrath. Unfortunately, the film didn't say much about the father, but The Art of Darkness, the concept art book by Mark Salisbury and Del Toro, gets a bit deeper, offering abridged biographies from Del Toro's notes. According to these biographies, Lucille poisoned her father after he left Thomas in the woods. What the film does tell us is that Lucille, at age 14, murdered their mother, driving a hatchet into her head while she soaked in the bath. Authorities sent then-12-year-old Thomas to boarding school, while Lucille was taken to an asylum. She essentially moved from one prison to another. In the early days of asylums, the patients received little in the way of actual treatment. In all likelihood, Lucille was beaten and sexually abused, kept in unsanitary rooms, and tormented. As a result, her mental condition deteriorated. Once released as an adult, Lucille returns to the house. Allerdale Hall is part of her, from her corseted dresses to her quick temper. As run down as the home is, as awful as her childhood was, Allerdale Hall is the only place Lucille feels safe, like an abused animal returning to its cage. She hates the house, but it's the one space where she has absolute control. And restoring the house might restore part of her. The place may be filled with ghosts, but they're nowhere near as dangerous as Lucille. Her rage is born from abuse. Her mother was cruel. Lucille became crueler in effort to protect her brother. She truly feels that what she's doing is for the best. As Del Toro says, Lucille is the dark heart of the film. Some people argue that Lucille is unfeeling, but I believe they're wrong. Lucille took beatings to protect her brother, resulting in scars on her back and her face. She can't stand to be alone because it feels like abandonment. Thomas is the whole of her world. She believes she's doing what's best for him. If you watch carefully, Lucille is the only character in the film who gets to wear red. The red gown, the red ring, the red ghosts, the red clay of the mountain, all connect her to death. If you want to find the killer, follow the trail of blood. The difference between Lucille and other female villains is her lack of enjoyment. She does what she deems necessary, but she's not sitting back and laughing maniacally. She's not having fun. She's not enjoying her wickedness. Lucille's monstrosity is her utter, raw, and inescapable humanity. As horrific as Lucille's actions are, and it takes a certain level of horror to concoct a reverse Black Widow scheme, she's also fragile, delicate, and sensitive. These traits are not to be confused for weak. Lucille is razor sharp, and she's adaptable. She can sense and feel the shift in mood and energy. She loves as strongly as she hates. Early in the film, Lucille leaves Thomas and Edith to watch butterflies as they succumb to the onset of winter. She likens herself to a black moth, thriving on the cold and the dark, feeding on butterflies. For a brief moment, she even tries to protect Edith from their scheme. But there is something about Lucille that remains tender. Even though she's murdered four women, she keeps locks of their hair in a trinket box in her attic room, along with pinned butterflies. She's twisted by her circumstances and her desire to have the life she wanted, the life she deserved. Crimson Peak isn't about the ghosts. It focuses on the twisted relationship between Thomas and Lucille, the fractured family dynamic. It's about how they suffered, and, only having each other, how their perception of love warped. Lucille desperately wants to be loved, and she finds solace in Thomas. Edith threatens her entire existence, and if Thomas leaves, there is no more life for Lucille. It's over. She's done. Modern horror rarely gives female characters any role beyond naked, screaming airhead, jilted, jealous ex-girlfriend, or pious virgin. Lucille offers the opportunity to relate as both monster and victim. My heart goes out to her. I've never felt more connected to a character on screen than I did with Lucille. In fact, I went to see the movie again, specifically for her. Sadie Doyle's Guardian article, Rise of the Female Monster, ends with a spectacular point made by the Bronte sisters. The only battle that matters is between a woman and her own inner darkness. Doyle continues, that darkness may not be something everyone wants to confront, but it's a refreshing reminder that women are human, shrieking, axe-murdering rage, and all. If you went to see Crimson Peak expecting a slasher, yes, I dare say you were disappointed. If, like me, you were delighted to finally see a historical gothic in the public eye, you probably loved it as much as I did. I adored the inversion of tropes, where we have two incredibly strong and powerful women calling the shots, and the weak and tormented men. In fact, all the men are thoroughly objectified. Their sole purpose is to be dark and brooding or utterly devoted. Overall, if you like gothic horror, go see Crimson Peak while it's still in theaters. You won't be disappointed. And yes, there are a few jump scares for those of you who want old school horror. If you have seen it and want to embrace your newly found or newly rekindled lust, I'm here to assist you. As we said in episode 1, gothic fiction began with Horace Walpole's The Castle of Otranto, written in 1764. If you want more familiar territory, Bram Stoker's Dracula and my girl Mary Shelley's Frankenstein are perfect. If you're dying for strong female heroines, and who isn't, my dear friend Liana Renee Heber's Magic Most Foul Saga and The Eternophiles are a lovely place to start. I hope Lucille helps herald in a new trend in horror, gothic and modern alike. Let the female monster rise. Courting Casualties is a monthly podcast produced by me, Megan Harker. Since I was little, I've been obsessed with monsters, and that remains true today. I specialize in Victoriana, and am currently working on my own gothic horror novel. In the modern world, I'm a horror writer for girlsandcapes.com, where I talk about horror in books, television, and film. I also write for criminalelement.com, where I talk about American Horror Story. You can find me on Twitter at ExquisitelyOdd, or on my website, ExquisitelyOdd.com. I am also on Instagram at Megan_Harker, where I post in-progress and completed artwork, and the occasional photo of my cat. The music in this episode is Veins, composed by Kevin MacLeod and used under the Creative Commons license. If you enjoyed this show, please consider subscribing. Reviews are also appreciated. Thank you for listening, and as always, stay strange. Oh, and in case you wondered, I saw Crimson Peak 4 times. I absolutely do not have a problem.